95 BFM News Election Coverage 2020, Local Economy.
As part of our election coverage on the local economy, James Tapp spoke to Mark Gosling, who is the CEO of the Trust Arena and on the executive board of the Entertainment and Venues Association New Zealand. As COVID-19 is disrupting everyone's lives, many things have changed, including the ability to attend events. Even though the events industry has changed a lot over the past two decades, COVID-19 is a major threat and this doesn't want to be lost. To understand what the events industry is needing from the government, James started off by asking what support the industry has gotten so far.
Well, obviously it's done the wage subsidy, which was, you know, has been hugely helpful. Without the wage subsidy, I think we'd all be in a world of trouble. And so aside from that, there's almost like there's two ministries that are involved in events. There's the Ministry of Arts and Culture that have taken an approach of putting funding mainly into content makers. So it's all, they've given Creative New Zealand some more money, and they have really tried to kind of, I suppose, support the performing arts side of things in terms of putting money into it. But it's pretty much all gone into the makers of content. And so, there was some money set aside that was given to small music venues, I think under 1,000 capacity, places like the Lee Sawmill, I think, and some of those small venues. There was a bit of money there for them. And then on the other side of it, MB have kind of taken on the role of sort of liaising with the association. So there's kind of, it's like four or five main associations that represent the various different sectors of the events business as a whole. There's one for event professionals, who kind of the guys that, you know, organise triathlons and those kinds of things. Then there's SINS, which is a business one, which represents all the kind of business meeting people. Then there's the New Zealand Promoters Association, so on. So Phil Twyford, or Minister Twyford, kind of took on the responsibility of kind of representing the events business, because we don't actually have our own ministry like tourism does. And so he kind of said, well, I'll put my hand up and represent you. And so MB created this thing called the Domestic Events Fund, which is managed by their major events people. And that, again, is really down for content makers. It's designed to for kind of festivals or major events that already exist that might not have been able to go ahead because of COVID-19. And so, yes, so again, it's kind of firmly aimed at content rather than venues. And so I suppose as venues, our kind of push has been, it's fantastic that you're putting all this money into the content side of things, but that's not going to help us in the short term, because obviously right now no one can go and see the content anyway, because we can't have more than 100 people in the venue. And so one of the things that we've been asking the government for is some kind of short-term help for some of the venues that are kind of suffering a lot in terms of costs, and that's really based on the fact that, you know, we're carrying big overheads, you know, as an arena or a stadium or even a, you know, performing arts theatre with 400 seats, you're still carrying big overheads in terms of insurance and power bills and all those other kinds of things that buildings need to pay in order to survive.
So has this been overall seen as adequate, or has there been a lot of sort of disagreement as to whether this was the right way to go about making sure that the industry was supported during COVID?
Well, certainly from our side of things, we're on the one hand, we're saying that it's great that they've helped the way they have, but it isn't enough, and it isn't going to be enough, because right now we're effectively still pretty much in a lockdown situation in terms of what level 2.5 and level 2 actually allows us to do in terms of operating our businesses. And so we're trying to point out to them that there's a gap and we're kind of falling through the cracks a bit. Whether they're taking any notice or not is another matter. They haven't done anything to date that's kind of responded to those, to that point, I suppose.
So going into the next term of government, what sort of support is going to be needed for the industry to make sure that everything is kept afloat?
Well, I think it's sort of like a two-pronged approach. It needs to be, we need some short-term help for those venues that are really struggling. And at the same time, we need to have a conversation with government about how we operate at these different levels. I mean, right now, we've yet to have any kind of conversation with the Ministry of Health, who seem to be the final arbiters of like who can do what under which level. And so we're in a situation right now where we can't operate at any meaningful level under 2.5 or at level 2. We think, we don't know what level 1 is going to look like if they change it. We know what level 1 was the last time, and that was great, but there's no guarantee that we're going to go back to that same version of level 1 as we had the last time. And even if we do, then we need a better plan in place that if we go back from level 1 back into level 2 or level 2.5 again, because there's another cluster, we'd like to have a much better plan in place for what events can do rather than the restrictions that are currently attached to those levels. And so our, I suppose, biggest gripe, we just don't seem to be able to have that conversation right now. We're not really being listened to, I suppose, about the need to have that conversation. And so, you know, we think that there's plenty of science out there and plenty of process out there that would allow us to operate events, you know, safely under different levels. But we need to be able to have that conversation with someone in government that says, yeah, okay, sounds good to us. You know, there's tons and tons of stuff coming out of the UK and Europe and out of Australia of, you know, the science behind transmission, the science behind, you know, and how to, you know, minimize the risk. You know, and I don't think anyone in the venues industry is saying that we should do something that's inherently unsafe, but we do think there are ways of doing it safely. And so we just need to have that conversation.
So what could this mean for international events going into the future? So, I mean, we've got the America's Cup coming up, and then looking further into the future, because, I mean, we don't know how long this is going to go on for, but...
Yeah, yeah.
So what could it mean for all this?
Yeah, I think there's obviously a scaled approach to it. The first thing we need to do is to try and work out how we can safely operate at the different levels, just, you know, domestically with the products and content that we've got in this country. And once we do that and we have that conversation and we kind of agree how that's going to look, then the next stage is, okay, how are we then going to allow some of those international performers or football teams or whatever it is to actually come into the country safely and take part in those competitions. And so you need to have the process in place first. And then you have to basically, you know, start the conversation about the border. I know that, you know, there are promoters out there now trying to seek exemptions for a concert to take place. You know, I'm not, who knows which artist, but obviously a major artist. And I don't think they're having much luck right now, because the bar that MB have set, I suppose, in terms of, you know, what boxes you have to tick to get that over the line, is currently set so high that virtually no one reaches it. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure that, you know, the ASB tennis tournament is desperately trying to get, you know, exemptions for players to come into the country and so on and so on and so forth. So there's obviously a lot of pressure there. And I think it comes down to, if we're kind of going to go down the track as a country of pretty much accepting the fact that we're going to operate in this kind of environment until a vaccine is developed, then we need to find a way of people being able to go out safely to events. Otherwise, we could be looking at, you know, a year or two of nothing, of yeah. No events. And I don't know, I personally don't want to go back to a standard level 1 like it was the last time, and then have to go all the way back to level 3 again because there's another outbreak. I think as venues, we would rather have some more restrictions at level 1 that lessened the chance of a cluster developing, and be safer about it, and then have less, just have less risk, I suppose, of going back to level three. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
Has there been any need for more support in, say, rural areas compared to urban areas? Has there been any significant difference at all?
Well, I think the regions always need more help than the big cities, just because they have a reduced access to content anyway. You know, their ability to attract events is always constrained a bit by, you know, where they are in the country. Obviously, you know, that they are no doubt suffering from, you know, the travel restrictions, I suppose, that were in place for Auckland. I know that I was talking to one of our other board members that runs some of the venues in Rotorua. They were cancelling events because the people that were taking part in them, like performers and choreographers, were stuck in Auckland and couldn't leave. So, you know, an Auckland lockdown affects the regions as much as it affects Auckland in a way, in terms of their ability to put on shows. And so, yeah, I think they're always going to struggle a bit more than we will, and they're always going to be badly affected by what happens to Auckland.
So with the inability of the majority of events unable to take place at even level two and above, do you think this gives the New Zealand economy an opportunity to diversify, and that a huge portion of New Zealand's economy does depend on, say, events and tourism?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I suppose the thing is that, I mean, I suppose I see events as being like they're kind of part of the lifeblood of society. They're part of the fabric of society. You know, the fact is that, you know, we all enjoy going out to the, you know, myriad different opportunities there are out there of things to do, whether it's a car show or a concert or a rugby game or whatever it is. And it's part of what we think of as being a normal part of society. And I don't think we would necessarily, I'm sure as businesses, we're all trying to find ways of making money out of our venues in different ways than we did before. But our core love and our core passion is always going to be to put on events for people. It's a very passionate industry. I think most of the people that work in it get very, you know, get excited about putting on events. It's kind of what we do. So I think there's a danger that I'm seeing it now in some of my friends from back in the UK and Europe, where they're just starting to find other jobs. You know, a lot of the people that certainly on the technical side of events are just finding other jobs because they can't, you know, there's no work for them. And so there's a real danger that in the long run, if it goes on too long, that we'll start to lose big chunks of IP out of the business, that companies will close, that our access to equipment and all the rest of it and that knowledge will start to go. And that's kind of a scary scenario, I think, from, you know, putting New Zealand's events business that's been built up so much in the last 20 years back, you know, a good portion of time. And I don't think that's well understood, really, by a lot of people.
Decision 2020.